This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
In the limelight.
Dr. Anthony Fauci, the chief White House medical advisor who has clashed publicly with Florida's governor, Ron DeSantis, told CBS's Face the Nation program, wearing face masks to combat COVID was a responsibility to society, and that data from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and the American Academy of Pediatrics supported masks in schools. We'll prepare for you an article written by Richard Luscombe. The piece is titled, Fauci backs new mask guidance as Florida reports highest one-day COVID case total. The article has been taken from a British newspaper, The Guardian. Florida's ban on mask mandates came under increasing scrutiny from public health officials on Sunday, 1st of August, as a surging Delta variant pushed new daily cases of COVID-19 in the state to a record high. The 21,683 new cases reported on Saturday, 31st of July, was Florida's highest one-day total since the start of the pandemic. It came a day after Governor Ron DeSantis signed an executive order prohibiting school districts from requiring staff and students to wear face masks. On Sunday, 1st of August, the state broke its previous record for hospitalizations, also set more than a year ago. Dr. Francis Collins, director of the National Institutes of Health, told CNN's State of the Union program he was baffled by the prohibition on requiring face masks in schools, the latest in a series of autocratic moves by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, including outlawing vaccine passports and stripping local authorities of the power to issue restrictions or mandates. Dr. Francis Collins, director of the National Institute of Health, said, "I don't understand the ban. Certainly, this seems like something local officials ought to be able to decide based on their community's circumstance," he added. "We do know that children are capable of getting pretty sick. We've lost about 400 children who have died from COVID-19 since this all started. And kids can also get long COVID, where they end up months later with difficulties with brain fog and fatigue that interferes with their school performance." Dr. Francis Collins noted, "So this is not to be just dismissed as a zero risk. Kids also live in homes, are related to people in those homes who are perhaps immunosuppressed. They could bring home the virus and cause bad outcomes." Also on Sunday, 1st of August, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the chief White House medical advisor, took issue with the portrayal by Florida Governor Ron DeSantis, a prominent Trump ally and potential Republican presidential nominee in 2024, that the ban was a protection of individual freedoms. Florida Governor DeSantis said on Friday, 30th of July, The federal government has no right to tell parents that in order for their kids to attend school in person, they must be forced to wear a face mask all day, every day. Anthony Fauci, who has clashed publicly with Ron DeSantis, told CBS's Face the Nation program wearing face masks to combat COVID was a responsibility to society, and that data from the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, and the American Academy of Pediatrics supported wearing face masks in schools. Anthony Fauci said, "You understand people feeling that they have the individual right to make their own decisions, and I respect that for sure. But the issue is, if you're going to be part of the transmission chain to someone else, then your decision is impacting someone else." He added, "It's not only impacting you, and you've got to think about it, that you're a member of society and you have a responsibility." Vaccinated people can carry high levels of the virus and transmit the infection to the unvaccinated. Data that prompted the Center for Disease Control and Prevention to amend guidance and recommend the vaccinated people wear face masks indoors in areas where transmission and infection rates are high. Dr. Fauci added, "If you get breakthrough infections in individuals who are vaccinated and they don't spread at all to anybody else, you would not worry." He added, "If they went home to a vulnerable person in the household, children or an elderly person, there wouldn't be any issue." Dr. Anthony Fauci noted, "But we know now that they can transmit when they get breakthrough infections, even though they have minimal symptoms or no symptoms at all. We know they can do it. We know the mechanistic reason for it is that the level of viruses is high, so you want to make sure you don't get infected. That's the fundamental basis for the CDC modifying its guidelines." On ABC's This Week program, Dr. Anthony Fauci said he saw no need for a return to lockdowns, but said, "We're looking to some pain and suffering in the future because we're seeing the cases go up, which is the reason why we keep saying over and over again the solution to this is to get vaccinated, and this would not be happening." As the highly contagious Delta variant of the coronavirus spreads, Florida has become the new U.S. epicenter of the virus, accounting for about one-fifth of all new cases. The spike was a substantial leap from 17,093 the day before and surpassed the previous high of 19,334 set in January before vaccines became widely available. Courthouses, theme parks, and numerous businesses are again requiring the public to wear face masks indoors. Disney World added a requirement that workers must be vaccinated. Universal Orlando Resort said all workers have to be masked indoors and that guests should follow CDC guidelines. Florida ranks about halfway in vaccinations with 48.8% of residents over the age of 12 fully vaccinated and 57.5% having received at least one dose of the vaccine. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has urged residents to get vaccinated but has mocked CDC guidance on masking and dismissed the surge as seasonal. Hospitals say they are being overwhelmed by admissions mostly of younger, unvaccinated patients. Over the last days, 409 Floridans have died of COVID-19, with a total now above 39,000. The previous record for COVID hospitalizations in Florida was set on 23rd of July last year. According to the Florida Hospital Association, Florida then had 10,170. The state leads the United States in per capita hospitalizations. In the recent days, it has averaged 1,525 adult and 35 pediatric hospitalizations a day. Dr. Francis Collins also noted that other states, including Louisiana, Missouri, and Tennessee, were experiencing significant upticks in infections, saying the virus was having a pretty big party in the middle of the country. The Dr. Francis Collins told Fox News Channel on Sunday, "We're all determined to avoid lockdowns, but if we're going to be able to continue, whether in business or in school, to do things that we all really value, putting face masks on is the best way to ensure that things don't get worse. It seems like a sacrifice worth making." He said, "We've made a lot of progress here compared to where we were a year ago, but we just don't want to do silly things to cause the Delta virus to come back even stronger."
Discovering Islam.
After birth, death is the greatest event in every person's life. It is the most private experience of every individual that cannot be shared with anyone else. Their death is followed by the destruction of the body as we know. However, would that mean the total destruction of the person? Why do we die at all? What is the philosophy of our temporary life on this earth? Why is death so scary for many people? Is the dichotomy of soul and body true? And if that is the case, what is the soul and how would it leave the body? If there is one thing that we can be certain of, it's that we will die. Yet, death remains one of the greatest mysteries that man has ever known.
There is a definition of death which doctors give us, which is when the brain waves or the electrical waves in the brain stop. That would be counted as death.
Scientifically, death is the cessation of all biological functions that maintain a person. Roughly 150,000 people die around the world each day, so it should be one of the most familiar subjects for all. Most people wish that they never have to think about it or face death, and they're even scared to think about it.
If you ask someone to enter a room and no one would be able to leave that room and come back and give you an experience of how it felt to go into that room, many people would hesitate to enter that room. In the same way, when it comes to death, many people who have died, and none of them have returned back to life to give us or share with us how they experienced that death, or where did they go? So it's a transition to, for us in this world, and for many, somewhere unknown.
The word death conjures up an idea of the end of things. When we use death in English, we say when something dies, it seems to us almost to mean that it is now useless. It can be discarded. It has no value. It has lost its vitality. But it's not a very good word, or it hasn't taken a very good meaning in that way, because in Islam, death is a transference, according to many hadiths, from one abode to another abode. It is like walking through a doorway. If you call a doorway death, fine. It certainly is not an end to life. It is a continuation to life.
You know, we can understand why people find it uncomfortable to talk about death. And one of the reasons is because of the intense love we have for the world. And death signifies a departure from these attractive, beautiful things of the world.
All cultures correspond death with frightening thoughts and images. The reason for that is because we look at it from the departure site, because we are scared to leave what we are very much familiar with to the unknown. However, if we were to see it as an arrival, we find it to be more of a blessing than a loss.
It's a shedding of clothes. It's taking, I don't know, you can say a shower and cleaning the filth from your body. So in other words, it's an existential thing. It's not absence of something. Unlike what we are brought up being taught, or directly or indirectly, about how death is absence of life. No, life, is, as we know it, is something that has different stages in Islam. So it's not that we have life and then death. Life continues. We just have to shift. We have to cross the bridge. Imam Hussein alayhi salam on Ashura, he would tell his companions that be patient. Death is nothing but a bridge where you're crossing to go to the better stuff, to higher levels of existence and life actually.
We are born for eternity, and death unfortunately is taken negatively as if it means the end. The Islamic explanation is that death is just a transfer, it's a gateway to enter the second, or the stage after this current stage. Stage one is this life, stage two is transition between this life and the afterlife, the barzakh, stage three, eternity.
What's important to realize is it's all like what we call the circle of life. There was the side of the human being descending from the higher up to dunya. And that's why dunya is called dunya, because it's at the bottom of the cycle. And then it will start to ascend back again to where it came from. And that's when the soul is separated from the body and the nafs goes back. Inna lillah wa inna ilayhi raji'un.
Yeah, Islam's picture of life and death is part of a broader process, part of a bigger process. It is simply a gateway into that which is to come.
Death is really the bridge that unites the lover with his beloved, meaning that, you know, man who loved his Lord, he now wants to meet his beloved, his creator.
Man is a traveling creature. He starts from a drop, to clinging mass, to a fleshy tissue, to a fetus, to a baby, to a child, to a youth, to an adult, to an elderly, and eventually to the grave. But is the journey going to stop here? Is this the end? Or there are other stations to this uninterrupted journey?
We have a verse in the Quran, Ya ayyuhal insan innaka kadihun ila rabbika kadhan famulaqih. O man, you're moving towards your Lord, you're traversing a path towards your Lord, and you will eventually meet him. This shows that we're on a journey, and life is a journey, and it ends with meeting our Lord. Does this journey end with death? The answer to this is that if we look at what the definition was in the beginning of life, then we will understand that life doesn't end with death. And since life doesn't end with death and is continuous, then so the journey continues as well.
The baby's journey to the world is full of wonders, and the elderly travels to the grave is even more wondrous. Now, based on Islamic teachings, death is ripeness of the soul and its readiness to be picked and initiated into the wonders of a new life. It is the tunnel to a phenomenal world of wonders.
The death, as we know it, is not an end to life. Rather, it is a portal, a doorway into a new and more expansive existence. And indeed, as we move on in this journey from this dunya into barzakh and then later on to the Day of Judgment, we are constantly evolving and changing. We're not dying.
But where is the destination of this journey? How many more stations are out there? Where is the map for this long travel?
We're here for eternity. We're born for eternity, not for death. Yes, since death is going to take us closer to that eternity, then in a sense you can say we're born to die. But not we're born to die in the sense that we are born for absence of life. No, we are born so that eventually we will be transmitted from one level of existence in life to the next level of existence in life to eventually attain that eternity we were born for.
Some say there is no afterlife, but they only assume. And why should we follow their assumption? Why should we think that this journey should stop so abruptly? Why should man, this traveling creature, stop traveling? If he were to stop, why did he set out? Why shouldn't we follow those who claim knowledge of that side and listen to those who only assume?
Somebody recently sent me a picture of twins in the womb of mother. One of them arguing that there is no life after birth, another saying there is life after birth. So in the similar way, we are in this world. Those who believe, they are arguing there is no life after this world, and others say there is no, and there is life after this world.
I believe there is an afterlife, but I believe it cannot be objectively proven. It is something which you need to go inward through introspection, through interaction with Allah, seeing the signs in your life. I believe the afterlife can be discerned from this life itself.
We started from that drop of water, and we are where we are now. However, for the final destination, we need more progress. The Quran gives us some preview of what we may expect in our progress into future. We have to be prepared for that great encounter, meeting with the Lord, the Creator. He wants to share with us what he has. وَبَشِّرِ الْمُؤْمِنِينَ بِأَنَّ لَهُمْ مِنَ اللَّهِ فَضْلًا كَبِيرًا. He loves that you live beside him, pure and honest. فِي مَقْعَدِ صِدْقٍ عِنْدَ مَلِيكٍ مُقْتَدِرٍ. He's waiting to meet you and to live with you forever. خَالِدِينَ فِيهَا نُزُلًا مِنْ عِنْدِ اللَّهِ.
Death is an astonishing pass through the world of wonders. Some people have had flavors of that adventurous dimension on many instances of near-death experience.
Near-death experience is a personal, involuntary experience in which the person will see itself outside the body and while in a condition of a crisis like an accident or a surgery, and the person will be considered clinically dead, but then eventually the person will come back. And in the case of the near-death experience, the person will have a recollection of what happened during this period in which he or she was completely considered dead.
In his book, Life After Life, The Investigation of a Phenomenon, Survival of Body Death, the American psychologist and medical doctor Raymond Moody has compiled a huge data and presented extensive analysis on near-death experience. He's classified the experience of 150 patients with near-death experiences into several categories. Now, one group experienced that they left their bodies while they were absolutely conscious and could observe the efforts of the medical team. Another group felt that they were okay in a body different from their physical body. Now, Moody uses the term spiritual body for this.
In the case of the near-death experience, it happens when the person is close to death, or when this person is actually considered dead, which means no heartbeat, no brain activity whatsoever. So in this this case, what happens is that the person will experience different things that we cannot see here, and the person will normally have some characteristics. For example, the person will hear sometimes noises that we call it intracranial sounds. It just happens inside of their heads. Then normally they see a tunnel. Many times they see a light at the end of the tunnel. So they float, or sometimes they just go quickly towards the light.
Other experiences implied losing the sense of physical time, peace and tranquility, confusion as a consequence of leaving the physical body. Another group reported that they saw a prominent religious personality in a body made of light.
Some others stated that initially they did not realize they were in a new body until they found out that the hearing and their vision of their relatives was too weak to see or hear them, although their own senses had intensified so that they could hear and see new things.
What these studies tell us is that firstly, our knowledge about human being is much less than what we assume. And secondly, we have to confess that our current scientific tools are inadequate for these novel areas of research. And finally, and most importantly, not everyone has the same experience of death.
يعلمون ظاهرا من الحياة الدنيا, the Quran says. People appreciate only very surface aspects of the creation. وهم بالآخرة هم غافلون. And they're oblivious of the expansive nature of what I have really created.
Generally, death is an experience similar to the birth of a baby, where it travels from one world to another. The difference, however, is that the baby cannot remember anything from its previous world, while the baby's soul is extremely astute and can feel the difference. By entering into that realm, the soul moves one step closer to its completion, and its power to comprehend the realities of existence would increase. Hence, it is now one stage nearer to the final destination, meeting with the Lord. A meeting which is not like meeting of a person with another person, but meeting of two worlds.
The whole purpose of this worldly life, this transient, ephemeral and fleeting 70 or 80 years, is that we prepare our souls, we make them ready and fit for the divine proximity and divine neighborhood, so that we become the neighbors of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We become fit to have that beatific vision in paradise.
The soul is very difficult to define, but in a simple expression, it is what we call I, the one who wills, who decides, who judges, who loves and hates, the one who uses the body as a means towards its end. We usually think that these are functions of the mind, while the mind is a simple conglomeration of absolutely separate cells.
We have to see what defines a person. Is it the body, or is it the me within the body? When we're growing up as kids, we have that me in us. As we grow older, we feel that this same me that I had when I was a kid is still that same me. Of course, experiences are added to me, but the me is the same me. We can't fool ourselves. As we grow older and older, the same me again and again. So, does the person die? We have to see. The body will die for sure. The body is destroyed for sure. But the person, no. The person will live on. That me, or in other words, the soul, is going to live on.
Meccans asked the Prophet, tell us what the ruh is. What is the spirit? He said, يَسْأَلُونَكَ عَنِ الْرُوحِ قُلِ الْرُوحُ مِنْ أَمْرِ رَبِّي. They ask you about the soul, what it is. Tell them that the soul is my Lord's command. And that's all you can understand. You can't understand more than that. And of course, you know, when I say you can't understand more than that, you know, some people will say, well, we live in a very enlightened age of science and technology and information, and we have everything on our fingertips. But let me tell you, you know, the best minds in physics, the best minds in biochemistry, the best minds in genetics, best minds in technology and engineering, and in every field will say to you, we only know this much. We only know this much of the physical world.
It is true that the soul knows this world by the help of body and its different organs. And if it was not for the body, the soul would have not known anything. It is as the Quran mentions, وَاللَّهُ أَخْرَجَكُمْ مِنْ بُطُونِ أُمَّهَاتِكُمْ لَا تَعْلَمُونَ شَيْئًا وَجَعَلَ لَكُمُ السَّمْعَ وَالْأَبْصَارَ وَالْأَفْئِدَةَ لَعَلَّكُمْ تَشْكُرُونَ. God has brought you forth from the wombs of your mothers while you did not know anything. He made for you hearing, eyesight and hearts so that you may appreciate. Mutually, if it was not for the soul, the body would not have been able to do anything. Death happens when the soul leaves the body. The question is, what would the soul do without the body, which was its only means to every end? The answer is that it lives in another body.
When you die, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts your soul in another body. Now, let's say it like this. You have a body in the once you die as well. And you will eat, you will drink, and so on. Or you will be punished to an extent. So, and this is called the mithali body, they call it. Which means that you have that same shape and form, but you don't have material anymore. Okay, so you have height, width, maybe length, but you don't have that material. Okay, it's not something tangible. And that's why we, in this realm of life, we can't see those who have passed away.
The soul is the real us. The body is a vehicle. That's why when, for example, we look in the mirror and we say, I, we don't mean this body with its limbs. If we were to lose a hand tomorrow and look in the mirror, we'll still say I and mean the same thing. We won't say I less five fingers. So we have an understanding of the real us, who we refer to as I. This soul requires, depending on which environment it is in, a body of sorts. And there will be a more subtle body that it occupies as it moves on into Barzakh, and an even more subtle body that it occupies when it moves into the Day of Judgment.
Death is really a move from one realm of existence into another. It is moving from the physical world, the material world, the touchable world, the tangible world, into the realm of spirit, the realm that is spiritual, the realm that is beyond and above the laws of physics, really. Gravitation or material or physical things actually don't exist in that world. It's a world of its own, with its own laws and with its own way of operating.
That spiritualistic communication or spiritualistic sense is simply that sense which is not materialistic, the sense which is got that third component, if we may call it.
Rumi refers to these senses in his famous book, Masnawi. There are five senses other than these five senses. Those are like red gold, while these are like copper. The prophets communicated with the angels through these senses, and the Prophet of Islam went to Mi'raj, the ascension, with his spiritual body, and heard and saw things by his spiritual senses. These senses will be activated for all after they die.
In this world, the soul is not able to manifest its true potentials. It is governed largely by the constraints of the material world around it. And it is an uneasy, if you like, passenger in the vehicle that is the body. However, there is a purpose to this existence, and the soul requires to have this phase of its existence. But it really, if you like, flies and flourishes once it is free from that fetter of the body, and that is real life.
The spiritual body grows with us as we grow in this world. In fact, we have one aspect of this rooted in the middle world, and that is why we can communicate with that world in our dreams. So in this world, we live in two bodies, but since one is like an image of the other and completely matched on it, we realize that. Now, these two bodies belong to two dimensions of the same existence. On the moment of death, the soul discards its physical body and leaves this world with its spiritual body. So when we talk of death, we actually talk of ourselves in a new body, a body which is much more complicated and much more magnificent than our physical body.
The awareness, the power of the soul that is available to it, even in Barzakh, is exponentially different to that which was available to it in life. Even the kafir and the agnostic and the atheist, their ma'rifa and knowledge of reality is much greater than any scholar who's alive now, because the veils have been lifted and they see.
So every one of us leave this world in a spiritual body, a body which is lighter, fresher, and more agile than the body in which we are living now, a body with a special DNA partially created by us in this world. But what type of experience is death? Isn't going to be the same for all? Join me in the next episode of Discovering Islam to talk about this in more details. Until then, peace be with you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
Seven new large fires were reported on Sunday, August 2nd, bringing the total number of wildfires raging in the United States to 91, according to the National Interagency Fire Center, NIFC. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you, written jointly by Amir Vira and Dina Hackney, reporters. This article is published under the heading, 91 wildfires are burning across U.S., with Oregon's bootleg fire growing to over 400,000 acres. Stay tuned for more. Seven new large fires were reported on Sunday, August 2nd, bringing the total number of wildfires raging in the United States to 91, according to the National Interagency Fire Center, NIFC. More than 1.8 million acres have burned since these fires began, the NIFC said. More than 22,300 wildland firefighters and incident management teams are involved in battling the blazes. This year, 37,803 fires have burned more than 3 million acres across the United States, per NIFC. During the same period in 2020, 32,059 fires burned a total of 2.1 million acres. As hot temperatures and very dry vegetation persist, it is important to stay informed on current and predicted environmental conditions, NIFC said in its Sunday, August 2nd update. Check for fire restrictions and closures before you head out to enjoy your public lands. Now more than ever, we need your help to prevent wildfires, they said. Idaho is the state with the biggest number of large fires at 23. However, Oregon has the most acres burned, 554,587 among its 11 fires. The Bootleg Fire near the California border is alone responsible for burning 413,734 acres. The Bootleg Fire is currently at 74% containment and isn't expected to be fully contained until October 1st, according to NCWEB, the conglomerate for fire information in the U.S. The Dixie Fire in California has reached 244,888 acres in size and is 32% contained, according to the California Department of Forestry and Fire Protection. A total of 67 structures have been destroyed due to the Dixie Fire, and an evacuation order remains in place for the Boot Meadows, Jonesville, and Lake Philbrook areas. There have been no fatalities reported at this time. The Tamarack Fire, which is burning south of Lake Tahoe, is now 84% contained, according to NCWEB. It began on July 4th due to a lightning strike, and most evacuation orders for the area have now been lifted. Wildfires aren't just affecting the mainland U.S. The Mauna Road Fire on northern side of Hawaii's Big Island led to the evacuation of more than 7,000 people, according to County of Hawaii's Communications Director Cyrus Johnson. The fire has scorched more than 40,000 acres since it started recently. So far, two homes have been destroyed, Johnson told CNN by phone. Monsoon season has arrived in the West, bringing with it mudslides, flash flooding, and dust storms. The monsoon moisture moving into the region could potentially stomp out some fires and quench the dry vegetation and soil, but it could also cause more dangerous conditions. Lightning and high fire danger will likely result in new fire starts. Gusty thunderstorm winds could contribute to fire spread. Despite rainfall, initial attack resources could be overwhelmed and holdover fires are possible, said the National Weather Service office in Medford, Oregon. Red flag warnings are in place across central and eastern Oregon for the weekend, where the potential for thunderstorms has drawn out worries for more fire starts. With the Bootleg fire already blistering over 400,000 acres of the Oregon hills, lightning and strong winds from monsoon thunderstorms could start more fires, further straining resources. The rainfall might help control some fires in the region, but left behind will be the scorched earth that is prone to runoff and flash flooding. The United States isn't the only country experiencing serious wildfires. For the second straight day, more than 1,100 people have been evacuated by sea from the tourist hotspot of Bodrum to escape Turkey's forest fires burning along the Mediterranean coast. We help the evacuation of 1,140 people by 12 boats. Oran Dine, president of Bodrum Maritime Chamber, told CNN on August 2nd, "We did evacuation by boats yesterday as well, but I never witnessed something similar before in this region. This is the first time," a witness said. Then said, "While roads remain open and evacuations continue by land, evacuations by sea help keep roads open for fire trucks and ambulances. The death toll in Turkey's forest fires along the Mediterranean coast has increased to at least 8 people killed on Sunday, August 2nd, according to state-run Anadolu agency. The latest victims include a Turkish-German couple who were found in a house. According to the Turkish Agriculture and Forestry Ministry, 111 fires have started across the country since July 28. 6 fires are still burning in 3 different cities, the ministry said.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Imam Khomeini guided the Iranian nation to determine their own fate. June 4, 2021. A televised speech delivered on June 4, 2021 by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, on the 32nd demise anniversary of Imam Khomeini. Greetings be upon him. You should not be a slave to others because God has made you free. You should choose on your own. You are free to choose your fate. This is one of the obvious points in Islam. Therefore, the people's authority and democracy is reliant on these religious teachings. The Quran, Hadith, Nahjul Balagha, and the Holy Prophets and the Commander of the Faithful's behavior reflect these teachings. in the Siffin Sermon, Sermon number 216. The commander of the faithful says, "Therefore, do not abstain from saying a truth or pointing out a matter of justice." It basically says, do not avoid giving me counsel and express your opinion about my ways and methods. This is how it is. So the people's responsibility and rights are based on Islam. This was the first perspective. Government's need for popular support. The second perspective of the discussion about the Republican aspect of the Islamic Republic is about support and the need for popular support. This is also an obvious point. If governments, not just religious governments, rather all governments, are deprived of popular support, and if the people do not advocate them, they will have to live a life of wielding swords and cracking whips. In other words, it will not be possible to sustain the government. Of course, an Islamic and Quranic government is not after oppressing the people, wielding its sword and whipping the people. Therefore, it cannot live without the people's support. It was neither possible to create the Islamic Republic without popular support, nor was it possible after its formation to sustain the government without such support. Thankfully, the system has continued to exist and it will continue to exist from now on too.
Range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
The world with reporters.
Going Guantanamo Bay, where U.S. officials claim to be used as a detention facilities for hundreds of the most wanted terrorists on the earth, mainly Al-Qaeda and Taliban members. But there were dozens of prisoners who were not terrorists, but freedom seekers who were following their goals via peaceful attempts. The late Dr. Sayed Muhammad Ali Shah Mousavi Gardizi, or the prisoner number 1154, was one of them. He was brutally tortured by the U.S. forces during his nearly 4 years of detention in U.S.-run Guantanamo Bay. The late Gardizi was known as a popular political, cultural, and social figure in Afghanistan. He, along with 35 others, lost their lives 3 years ago after two Daesh terrorists detonated their explosive belts among them during Jummah prayers in a mosque in Gardiz, the capital city of southeastern Paktia province. Now, along with the arrival of the third martyrdom anniversary of the late Gardizi and 35 of his relatives, this webinar is launched to pay respect to him as a great man, as well as to review the American model of human rights and democracy. In the eyes of the attendees of this webinar, the U.S. just follows its own geopolitical goals under different slogans. And when it comes to dealing with anti-arrogance figures like the late Gardizi, and then this is American gun that operates instead of law, regulation and humanitarian values.
America has the United States claims it's defending human rights, but persons like Dr. Sayed Muhammad Ali Shah had neither held weapons nor committed any attempt against our national interests. He just sought to provide services to his own people and carry out intellectual and cultural activities.
The Americans did not come to Afghanistan to build a nation. Their main goal was to keep a close eye on the regional countries, mainly the U.S. rivals, including China, Russia, and Iran. Slogans such as human rights and democracy serve only as a tool at the hand of the U.S. to pursue its geopolitical goals.
It seems that the late Gardizi had already realized that the American model of human rights and democracy have no place in Afghanistan. That is why he seriously resumed his cultural and social activities in his hometown, Gardiz, after he was released from Guantanamo Bay.
The moves that the U.S. and NATO pursued under the guise of human rights and women's rights were often at odds with the country's indigenous culture. Later, all Afghans, mainly well-known figures like the late Gardizi, realized that the U.S. has been working for its own interests.
In the meantime, the attendees of this webinar insist on following the path of great figures like the late Gardizi as the symbols of strength, resistance, and freedom-seeker leaders. Sayed Amin Alami, Kabul.
As U.S. sanctions are still haunting Iran's oil sector, Tehran is resorting to domestic firms to keep the strategic sector up and running. This event is one of those efforts. Iran's Petroleum Industries Innotek Park hosted state and private oil companies as well as science-based firms to highlight the major needs of Iran's oil and petrochemical industries and find domestic suppliers to meet their demands.
In recent years, the restrictions and sanctions that have been imposed on our country have forced us to rely on our domestic resources. I dare say that Iran is capable of supplying at least 70% of its oil and gas industries. But it takes an all-out effort to let this happen, and that's what we do at the Petroleum Industry Innotek Park. We link our oil companies to potential suppliers and handpick and invest in the best viable products.
One of the primary concerns of an oil project is to ensure a sustainable water supply system. U.S. oil embargoes against Iran also target the subcategories of this branch, such as filtration membranes that are used in chillers and cooling systems. Experts say, as a result of the sanctions, it takes a painstakingly lengthy and complicated process to supply such products.
We are now in urgent need of what we call reserve osmosis system. It's a type of an industrial-scale water treatment system that removes contaminants from water by using pressure to force water molecules through a semi-permeable membrane. We cannot easily import these systems.
The good news is there are many domestic companies here that can supply ultrafiltration systems, like this firm that claims to have built competitive filters that outpace their foreign counterparts, both in quality and cost-effectiveness.
We are proud to announce that we have developed an ultrafiltration system that is equipped with ejectors and thermal compressors, which are a cutting-edge technology and are rarely used in other international brands. This is why our price is one-third of that of foreign counterparts.
With our systems, we no longer need to go through the complicated process of importing such equipment.
In 2018, Iran was the third largest